everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Lesbi Mommies Radio. Happy Monday. I'm your host, Elizabeth Kleva. Thank you so much for tuning in tonight. Tonight, we are talking all about the vagina, which as lesbians, I expect it to be your favorite subject. Specifically, we are talking about how to keep our vaginas healthy in a natural way, both for overall health, for our fertility, and for healthy pregnancies. I have midwife and vaginal microbiome expert Augustine Colebrook on the show. She's going to share some tips for keeping your lady parts healthy. And I want to give a quick shout out to Caitlin of Northern California for this week's show topic. She's the one that turned me on to Augustine, and I'm super excited to get into this. I think it's going to be very interesting. Next week, we have Stephanie Berman on the show talking about the coolest lesbian pregnancy invention ever. For those of you women that are in the process of getting pregnant, definitely don't miss next week's show. We are going to be talking about the Semanette. And I'm not going to tell you what the Semanette is. If you want to do a little research, you will find it online. But it is awesome, and we're talking about it next week, so stay tuned for that show. Find us online at lesbymommies.com, Twitter at lesbymomsradio, and Facebook at lesbymommiesradio. All right, let's get to our show. Let me introduce Augustine Colebrook. Augustine is an accomplished management executive with strong entrepreneurial heart who takes much joy in mainstreaming midwifery and the midwifery model of care by bringing the modern community-centered birth center choice to all low-risk women. After attending her first home birth at 8 years of age with her midwife aunt in Colorado, she knew her life's path. Her personal experience of laboring and birthing at home unassisted influences her work. She respects a woman's need for the empowering feeling of being undisturbed during labor and taking charge of her health for her whole life. An apprentice-trained midwife, Augustine has worked in different cultural environments and countries, including a rural Jamaican hospital, a birth center in Denmark, dirt floor huts in Mexico, and many homes in New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Delaware, Maryland, South Carolina, Florida, and Oregon. Having attended births as a midwife for more than 15 years, Augustine's focus is finely tuned to the process of letting go and opening to the unknown in labor and in life. It is her profound joy to illuminate the sacred journey of pregnancy for other women. Augustine is a nationally certified professional midwife and an Oregon State licensed midwife. She is also the executive director of the Trillium Water Birth Center and the clinic manager of Wise Women Care Associates. Augustine also runs a national consulting firm for birth center startups, advising midwives in business implementation strategies as well as best practice models. She is also writing a book for parents and editing a film project due out summer of 2016. Augustine, welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. It's a joy.
You are a very busy lady. Just reading that, I'm like, wow.
I am a busy lady. I'm also a single mom. That, I think, maybe takes the most time.
I bet. Jeez. All right. Well, thank you so much for being on the show. Let's get into it. So first, just talk about why we care about vaginal health. I mean, it's not something... I don't know. It's not something we have a lot of focus on. It's like you go to your gynecologist for your once a year annual exam, and that's, or if, you know, something comes up and you have some issue to deal with. But it's like we don't really aren't really taught a lot of just information about our vaginas and keeping them healthy. So why is it important? Why do we care about vaginal health? Why is it important to focus on keeping our vaginas healthy?
Well, the first most obvious reason, of course, is comfort. It'd be nice if we felt good and comfortable all the time. There's also the important safety issue. Having low immune system or other challenges to the body make it more disease prone. So there's sort of a lifetime benefit in cultivating good health in all the systems of the body. And I think you're exactly right. You know, I imagine that most women have this bizarre kind of duality relationship with their vagina. Like, it's fascinating, and there's all this information, but so much of it is incorrect. And then there's this weird social, moral, antiquated kind of perspective of, like, we don't talk about what's down there, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's my profound joy to, like, bring awareness to kind of the shadow sides of our bodies that people don't want to talk about or think about. And so digestion and the vagina tend to be two of them that I spend a lot of time talking about.
Awesome. I love it. So as someone that's gotten really into natural health, nutrition, and listening to natural health practitioners talk, one of the things you always hear about is a microbiome, specifically the gut microbiome. And it's fascinating when you get into it, but I'd never thought about the microbiome in our vagina. So, like I said earlier, I'm really excited to get into this. So first talk about what a microbiome is, and then talk about the vagina's microbiome specifically.
Well, one of the places where the microbiome is becoming really newsworthy is, of course, with the digestion, right? That's where people are becoming aware of this. In fact, the National Institutes of Health Roadmap Initiative has created a whole project called the Human Microbiome Project that is actually collecting data from different researchers during different studies and creating a whole catalog of what they're calling the second genome. It's pretty incredible, and a completely new approach to health. So the dominant paradigm in Western medicine oftentimes considers microbiomes or microbes as foreign, right? And so it's led to this view that we need to eliminate pathogens preventing disease. So this is the advent of all of this, you know, antimicrobial soap and, you know, this perspective of, like, Lysol and, you know, all these different products are from this kind of antiquated Western perspective that we need to kill the bad stuff. When in fact, history and most people's observations are the complete opposite. The more you use crazy antibacterial stuff, the less helpful and health you oftentimes achieve. In fact, this is why that microbiota are present from the time of birth and have up to tenfold the number of microorganisms to adult human cells, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that means that the metagenome, which exceeds our human genome in terms of gene contact by more than 100-fold, which is kind of fascinating. So these are the bugs that live on us, you know, and are helping us in so many ways. So Neil Stolman, who's a gastroenterologist and the chair of the Department of Medicine at Alta Bates Medical Center in Oakland, California, he developed and specializes in this fetal microbe transplant, fecal called FMT, fecal microbe transplant. And it involves taking actually healthy fecal matter from an adult and implanting it into a very unhealthy person to transplant the microbacteria more than the fecal matter doesn't really matter. It's a rich gland environment of these healthy microflora. So study after study shows how effective this can be at actually curing this nasty, you know, diarrhea bug that people sometimes call C. diff. And it sometimes cures it overnight. A lot of people aren't talking about this again because this is one of those hidden shadow parts of the human body. But, 500,000 patients get this every year, and more than 29,000 die every year from this bacteria that causes really crippling diarrhea. And so he started really promoting this, and it became very, very prevalent in the consciousness of the culture now, thinking about, oh, these guys are here to help us. We don't need to use Dial soap every day, you know. Or what are we washing off and why? I mean, there was this also study, I can't really quote it, but there was a study about practitioners' hands. So this really intelligent student, my medical student, took the idea to, like, take swabs of practitioners' hands before and after clinic visits and at the first in the morning and the evening and all these different things, and found that the practitioners' hands are more infested with the negative bacteria. You know, bacteria can either help us, it can do nothing, or it can be harmful to us. And they have more of the harmful bacteria than normal folks do without washing their hands, right? And so we're presuming that these practitioners are washing their hands all the time, but it's actually not being helpful. So this microbiome research is looking at how our microbiome changes over time, and also wondering how we can systematically add supplements or add these bacteria into our diet or onto our skin surface in order to change health. So there's a lot that we can do without those extreme measures of adding other people's bacteria to our body, but we are doing that every day just by being in contact with people, so that's something we always have to keep in mind. But we can also change our diet, talk about how we give birth, because that radically affects the initial colonization of the body. We can talk about supplements, and then we can talk about how to right an imbalance. And all that, we're actually talking about the microbiome, right?
Awesome. I had never heard about the studies on, like, doctors' hands. Now, is that...
I know, right?
Is that because I know we're going to talk about balancing the microbiome, which is the same thing that happens in the gut when it gets out of balance. Is that kind of what's happening on the skin? Is that the practitioners, whether it's all the triclosan they use or it's the constant washing, is it basically putting the microbiome out of balance, therefore the bad bugs are able to stick around more? Did they say why that's happening? Uh-oh, we lost her. Let's see, everyone. We are going to talk about... Yes, yay. All right. You're
so
back!
That's my... Yeah, sorry about that. That's my perspective. I would say yes. I didn't read that in the actual study, but my perspective is, yeah, that the balance is so shifted that their natural defensive mechanism, which is the second genome, like all of their beneficial bugs, all the flora and fauna that helps keep them healthy, is being washed away every day. And, of course, this is one of the concerns with excessive antibiotic use. And we can talk about that, too, because antibiotics, you know, they're designed to kill the biome, right? And they don't just kill the bad stuff. They kill the good stuff, too. Now, certainly, I don't want anyone to think I'm anti-antibiotics. It's definitely one of the most incredible advances of our time, and certainly saves lives, and is very, very important part of medicine. But it's about the appropriate use and finding out if there isn't maybe another way to shift some of these things, and that's what we're going to talk about.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. So talk about the vagina. What's going on in the vagina? And what is that microbiome up to?
Yeah, the vaginal microbiome is distinctly structured by the state of health of that particular woman and about the different parts of her lifetime that she's in. So the different stages of life. A very sexually active woman might have a different microbiome than would a 10-year-old girl, which would be very different than someone who's in the third trimester of their pregnancy. And these are natural shifts. This is not like abnormal, but these are natural shifts in the flora and fauna of a woman's vagina. So there's this one study that's a part of the Human Microbiome Project, and it's called a metagenomic approach to characterization of the vaginal microbiome signature in pregnancy. And what they found in their study is that although human adults have highly differentiated bacterial communities that are relatively stable, i.e. the same ones stay in the same people, they are also prevalent and in healthful states in pregnancy, and that the vaginal community in particular shifts naturally in its structure with respect to the diversity and richness. Previous reports that the vagina microbiome in a healthy reproductive age woman occupied stated that dominant was the lactobacillus and the lactobacillus cryptus bacterium, and that they are specifically associated with a low vaginal pH. So what I see in my clinical work is that the vaginal pH does drop in pregnancy, which does allow for a greater growth of this lactobacillus. But at the same time, the temperature is rising in pregnancy, and so that's where we actually need to spend some time today as well, is talking about those kind of awareness of those shifts. So the vagina is, this is what the word I like to use. I like to use the word organic vagiculture. And I don't know if I coined this, maybe I read it somewhere, but it describes it perfectly for me because I'm a gardener at heart and I love the resurgence of organic gardening in our time, in our culture. And so instead of using chemical warfare on our ground and in our vaginas, there's this really lovely, harmonious, organic, natural way to cultivate a really rich environment, which is the same thing we want for growing vegetables. We want the same kind of rich, beautiful environment to grow these lovely microbiome.
Awesome. So is that... Would that be if something happens, like if you have some sort of infection, or is this just in general?
Well, it's both, right? Because it's the solution and it's the natural state, right? We want to naturally have this lovely, healthy environment, but it's also the way to bring yourself back to normal health. So I have this sort of step-by-step thing we can go through.
Yeah,
but,
that'd be awesome.
First, I want to talk a little more about the vagina because, you know, that's the fun enough that we're doing. The vagina is exposed to all kinds of fluctuating hormones all the time. She's also experiencing the consequences of our modern diet, maybe stressful lives. There's also a huge prevalence of artificial products in our culture right now, not only self-care products, but also chemicals that are actually used in the production of clothes. So even when you're thinking about your cotton undies, they actually oftentimes have flame retardants or all kinds of other synthetic products sprayed on them because of shipping or because of manufacturing, not really for your use or your health at all. Also, the vagina is affected by visitors whose presence or the things they leave can stimulate or impact our vaginal ecosystem. So this vaginal ecology is kind of the study of the environment and its interactions. And by understanding ecology, you better understand your vagina and how to make her happy and healthy and supported and all those important things. So sometimes, even when you're doing a good job trying to keep yourself healthy, there could be potential infection. And a vaginal infection is called vaginitis. And so knowing what's normal is really important so that you can know if it becomes abnormal. So I'm going to get kind of non-PC here, really descriptive. Is that okay with you and your audience?
Do it. Yep, I love it.
Okay. So a normal vagina is always moist. It is slick, slippery, and savory. The taste and smell of vagina is mild, earthy, slightly pungent, has a pleasant, musky aroma. It does not smell like fish or have any strong foul odor. A healthy vagina does not smell bad. That's really important for people to know. If it does, there's something going on. And also, I know, people don't know this, so I'm really happy to share this.
Mm-hmm.
I always say pregnant women are really juicy, and that is, they're like ripe peaches, and that is the way it is supposed to be. When you're not pregnant, you still have normal vaginal fluid. You're juicy, but not as much when you're pregnant. So the vaginal fluid varies. It can be clear to white, but when it dries, it appears slightly yellowish. That's normal. That's not an infection. Some women are just naturally wetter or drier than others, just like some people have more oily skin or dry hair, or they sweat more or less. Like, that's all normal. But it should be normal for you. So keeping track of what you normally experience is important. Also, the amount of juiciness you have, the amount of vaginal fluid, also reflects where you are in your cycle, how old you are. You know, if you're sexually aroused, there's a different level of fluid. Also, if you're taking hormone contraceptives. And, of course, if you're dehydrated or if you're eating a crappy diet, you're going to have a different type of vaginal fluid. So in non-pregnant women, they're the juiciest the week leading up to and including the day of ovulation. And then they're the driest right before they get their period. And, of course, girls, before they get their period, breastfeeding moms, and women who've gone through menopause are all much drier. And that can be normal, but there's solutions to help with comfort around that. So Lactobacillus acidophilus is the main strain of bacteria that lives in the vagina. And its main job is to control the population of unfriendly microbes. And the most common one would be bad bacteria or yeast. And I say that with quotes, but that's a good overview. So one of the things that we talk about in terms of keeping a healthy vagina is talking about, again, that garden analogy. If you have a garden that's filled to the brim with flowers or with fruits or vegetables, you know, there's plants that you're harvesting from growing everywhere, then there simply isn't room for the weeds. So that's one major sort of proactive preventative measure, is just to make sure you've got lots and lots of the good stuff, which is that Lactobacillus acidophilus. And that is present in lacto-fermented foods, so kimchi and really naturally fermented sauerkraut and kefir and beet kvass. These are all naturally lactobacterial fermented foods that are available, or some cultures make. You can buy them. Most specialty stores and natural food stores have these available now for purchase. It also comes in a pill form, so you could buy the acidophilus supplements over the counter. Want to go for that refrigerated version because this is a live substance. And it's also present in the air. Lactobacillus acidophilus is present in the air. In fact, the way that you lacto-ferment vegetables is you get that good salt water brine going, and it pulls the lactic acid out of the air, which is how it ferments food.
Hmm. Didn't know that.
Yeah. I know. When you start talking about vagina, you didn't know you're going to start talking about cooking, too. So one of the first things to do, of course, is to really, really keep the vaginal environment full with that good bacteria. So one way to do this is just to take a supplement every day, yogurt or kefir in your diet. What I also recommend, especially for women that are concerned about them being kind of prone for other issues, or they've been struggling with various quote-unquote yeast infections or bacterial vaginosis, which we'll go into treatments for that in a minute, those women should just regularly do a Lactobacillus capsule up vaginally. So you just sort of insert it with one finger as far up as you can get it and leave it. And the capsule will disintegrate because the vagina is a naturally acidic environment. And then the Lactobacillus in the capsule will just recolonize the vagina. And so you can do that as much as every day if you're struggling, but you could do it once a week just to stay up on staying healthy.
So would you recommend that for anyone, or just if you kind of have recurring yeast infections or something?
I would recommend it for anyone, but especially for someone that is struggling with health. Yeah, it's just a naturally wonderful way to, like, reseed that garden.
Cool.
Yeah,
okay.
Definitely. And you can also do yogurt baths. This is another way to get that beneficial bacteria on your skin where it should be. And always use plain yogurt. This is a very important point. Vanilla has sugar in it. The opposite happens. It encourages the growth of yeast. No flavored sugared yogurt. It has to be plain. I had my mom be like, "This won't go away." I'm like, "Oh, Lord." It has to be plain. So plain yogurt, and just sort of do a rinse. And you can do this in your armpits, on your breasts, between your breasts, between your legs. I especially recommend this for moms that are heavier. And we're a fluffy mom, and I consider myself in this category. There's curves, which means there's folds, which means there's warm, dark, moist places for things to grow, and we want to have the good stuff growing. So to do yogurt baths, that can be so beneficial.
Hey.
Yeah, so another way that we can help have the good stuff grow is talking about the kind of the byproduct of this good acidophilus. So when the acidophilus is in this warm, dark, moist environment that does have the presence of air, you know, it's not an anaerobic, it's an aerobic environment, it's oxygenated, that it produces lactic acid and hydrogen peroxide. And so one of the things that we can do is we can do hydrogen peroxide rinse or even douche to help create the environment where the good stuff wants to live and decrease the environment where it doesn't want to live. And then the other thing we can do is change the pH, because we know that good stuff wants to grow in that more acidic environment instead of it being more alkaline in the vagina. So the things that change the acid-alkaline balance are easy household products. So baking soda is more alkaline and apple cider vinegar is more acidic. So depending on what you're struggling with, you can use one of those two simple home products to make a rinse, a little douche, a little, body rinse, or even a little sitz bath, just to help sort of change the pH of the environment.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Cool.
I know, we're on a run.
Awesome. So now, can it affect your fertility? I'd read that it can affect pregnancy, and we're talking about that in a minute, but can it affect your fertility?
Yes. Let me rephrase here quickly. Does the microbiome affect your fertility?
Yeah. Or it's out of balance.
Yeah.
You're
breaking up a little bit. I think I understood what you said. So it's all interrelated, right? So the microbiome is less rich because of the high pH or because of the other stuff living there, which is going to make the environment less advantageous for conception, because the complicated process of conception is that during an ovulatory phase in a woman, the actual shape of her vaginal mucosa and her vaginal secretions change radically. They actually turn into these like tunnel visions. In fact, it's sometimes called ferning. I don't know if you've heard of that.
Yeah.
So there's this great product I love to recommend. It's called the FemLens, and it's this little lipstick size container or microscope. And you just lick the surface and look through a window towards the light, and your saliva will form the same stratigraphy, the same shape formation as your vaginal mucosa does, because they're both mucosa creating the same kind of fluid. So there's either fertile fluid or there's non-fertile fluid. And when it's fertile, it creates this lovely ferning. And so you can actually check your fertility really easily without expensive tests by just getting this really cool $20 tiny little microscope.
Nice.
Yeah, it's a great product. And there's one called an OvuLens, and there's one called a FemLens, and there's a bunch of different products. But they're these little lipstick-sized things. And so you can actually see the shape of the mucus change, and it changes into these long, beautiful, they suck the sperm up. Like it's a roadmap to the cervix and into where the egg is. And if there is, a high pH, if the vagina is regularly too hot because of synthetic underwear, if we have all kinds of harsh chemicals there trying to change the smell, then this structure is not going to be, first of all, as roadmap-y for the sperm, but also is going to not provide the food source, because part of what these long fertile mucus strings do is they actually feed the sperm along its way. A lot of people think that the sperm is completely self-contained, but whether it makes it there or not is dependent upon this fertile mucus. And if we have this poor pH and all these bad bacteria and maybe these artificial products, of course it's going to change fertility. So it's all super interrelated.
Can you hear me? Oh my goodness.
Yeah, I hear you now. Okay, great. Yeah.
So weird. I don't know why I'm having any issue today. I just was saying thank you for explaining all of that, because I'd heard of that, but the way you said it just had it land for me in a way that makes much more sense now.
Oh,
so
good.
Thank you.
That's good. Yeah.
So talk a little bit about the bacterial vaginosis. Maybe talk a little bit about more about what it is. And I had read that it can lead to preterm labor, which is kind of scary. So talk a little about that.
Absolutely. Yeah. BV is no joke. And it's definitely something that we want to be aware of the symptoms and treat the symptoms right away, whether you're pregnant or not. First of all, it's just uncomfortable and unpleasant. So that's like number one motivation. Number two is certainly we have these risks to a pregnancy and to our overall health to have a bacterial out of balance like that. So BV is when we have a really unhelpful, unhealthy bacterium that is really taking over. And there are several different bacteriums that can cause bacterial vaginosis or BV. The symptoms are this relatively thin, whitish, kind of watery discharge that is usually foul-smelling. It can be described as fish, but it can also just be kind of like a bad smell. There is usually not that much discomfort, although there can be discomfort after sexual activity because you've irritated the tissues. And it usually is a pH above 4.5, like if you're measuring that. Some people get the home measure techniques. So it's really important that we understand the difference between BV and other potential vaginal infections. And vaginitis is really just like inflammation of the vagina, right? So there's lots of different reasons for that. So one is bacterial vaginosis. Another is trich, right? Or trichomonas vaginitis, vaginalis. And then another would be a yeast infection. A yeast infection is kind of a misnomer because we always have yeast in our vagina. So you don't actually get an infection. You have what's really more like an overgrowth. Does that make sense?
Totally.
Yeah. So I always kind of rally against the term, yeast infection. It's like, it's just you have an imbalance. You just have an overgrowth. Like, you just have to knock the yeast down a little bit because they're there for a reason. It's just too much right then, you know. So with BV, and I'll kind of go through my organic vagiculture kind of step. I don't know if you're a gardener, if it makes sense.
No, I love it. I am a gardener, and it does make perfect sense.
Okay, so if you were to, you know, work on a garden space or, you know, reclaim a garden space, you know, you had this crazy overgrowth, the first thing you would do is clear the brush. And I know it's kind of funny, clear the bush, but a lot of hair can really increase growth of stuff we don't want. So I'm not a proponent of the Brazilian, the full shave or wax. I don't think that promotes health. But I think that some judicial trimming, especially around the opening of the vagina, can kind of knock down the colonies, especially if there's, I don't know if that makes sense, but
it does.
That's the first step.
Well, yeah. And real quick, it's interesting that you say that having no hair isn't the best either. And why is that?
Well, because we create kind of hundreds of little openings in all of the skin follicles where those hair follicles were. And so actually, we almost create a breeding ground for infection when we clear the area.
Interesting.
But when we at least keep it trimmed at the opening, then if you have a propensity to grow some unhappy stuff, then they don't have a more of the warm, dark, dark, moist place to grow, right?
Gotcha.
Yeah. So cleaning the space is the next. And this could be either... like if you were in a garden space, you don't want chunks of plastic garbage around your garden plot. But also, you know, like I said, the extra hair would be one. And I this is all very personal, and I don't mean to prescribe the way to do it. I just mean to say that, you know, some people have very healthy, extravagant extra, you know, hair spaces, and they do just fine. But if you're prone to thickness or irritation, that would be a first step. And then the next would be to add soil amendments. Just like when we're gardening, we need to add the good things into the soil so we grow the good stuff. We might need to change the pH. We do the same thing with the soil. I don't know if you've ever grown, like, hydrangea, you know, is a good example. If the soil is very acidic, you grow blue flowers. If it's very alkaline, you grow pink flowers on the plant, you know, right there in the garden. So the same kind of thing. We might need to change the pH for ourselves. We need to feed the good bugs that are there, right? And then we need to use mulch. And that's kind of the steps for gardening. And so it's going to do the same thing for the vagina. So like I talked about in the beginning, clear the space, and then adding the soil amendment. So that might be like probiotics or the yogurt wash. Those might be good amendments to add in. We might be to change the pH, like we talked about the vinegar or the baking soda, that we get the right pH there. Feeding the good bugs, that might be like the hydrogen peroxide rinse. And then using mulch, my to keep the moisture in, right? That's why we put mulch on a garden. We use lots of bark mulch or straw or whatever to keep the moisture in. For the vagina, we would want to use coconut oil. It's one of the most underutilized items in the arsenal of taking care of your bottom and your vagina and your whole body, really. Because it's super antimicrobial, antibacterial. It's incredibly moisture rich. It's incredibly non-irritating. It's very easy to apply. I mean, I just can't speak enough. If you only do one thing on this list, take a cup of coconut water to the shower, coconut oil to the shower with you, do your whole shower routine, rinse off, and then take that solid coconut oil, because, you know, it's solid below 42 or 72 degrees, and just like it's just rub it all over your body, and especially put a little chunk up vaginally. And it just completely coats the area, and then you rinse off under the hot water. Your whole body becomes waterproof. You don't have to apply lotion later, and your body is also super antibacterial, antimicrobial, while it grows the good stuff. It's kind of like a number one solution.
Yeah, I'd heard that. I'd heard that coconut oil is antibacterial, but it doesn't kill the good bugs. It kills the bad bugs. So
yeah.
It actually works
awesome
on our bodies.
Yeah, internally and externally. I recommend cooking oil. You know, you replace all your cooking oil with coconut oil and use it in the shower as well, for sure. So that's kind of a step-by-step plan to, like, keep the health and get the good health. And there's one other piece I haven't mentioned, and this is using vaginal steams. And I don't know, you know, if your audience is familiar with this, but there couldn't be a simpler, better home remedy to add to sort of get in touch with your own health and to really bring nurturance and healing into your very core. So I've done this in groups before. I've done this individually. We do this postpartum. We do this for mamas that are having irregular periods. We do this for moms that are having repeat infections. Like, there's all kinds of reasons to do vaginal steams. They're sometimes called yoni steams or yoni baths. And it's really easy to do at home. Like, they sell all this apparatus online, or you can even go to vaginal steam clinics or boutiques or, like, little spots, like in the big cities like L.A., but you can do this at home. You just get a big pot of boiling water. You're going to put in some really antibacterial herbs, like I would do yarrow and calendula and rosemary. And, you know, there's just whatever you come up with. If you're an herbalist, you could get even more intense in what to use. But you just put in some good herbs. You also use essential oils and bring it to a boil, and then set it on like a towel. On the floor, and this will be your big stock pot, like where you boil lobsters in or something, like a really big pot. And you line the rim of it with another thick towel, and you sit down and wrap a really big thick blanket around yourself, like a thick wool blanket. And there you sit for 10, 15, 20, 25 minutes, as long as it still feels warm. And inside the blanket, you're getting this deep steam up into your bottom, up into your uterus. And I've had women that have really evacuated really old yucky things before, like chunks of old blood and things like that have released with this treatment. I hear women that have more energy, more vitality. They just feel warmer. It can be really an interesting perspective if we look at, like, Chinese medicine or Ayurvedic medicine, you know, that we as women tend to lose heat with every cycle as we bleed out. With our periods. And so replacing that heat, both every cycle but after birth, is really, really important so that you don't lose vitality, lose chi, right? So yeah. I can't recommend the vaginal steams enough. That's just a wonderful technique and can really help you feel, like, really self-nourished. It's a great self-care technique.
Now, do you recommend that, you said, after your period, once the bleeding stopped?
I do, yeah. Or right before your period's going to start is another lovely time. Some women get really, when they're charting, they get really tuned into their cycle, and they know that, you know, their period's going to start Saturday morning around 10. You know, it's amazing when you get into charting. And so, you know, Saturday morning they plan a steam. I think it's perfectly fine to do while you're bleeding too.
Okay.
There's some controversy around that, but I think it's fine too.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Now, are these specifically for treatment of the BV or just in general?
Yeah, so good question. So that's kind of my overall, you know, clear the space, add the soil elements, change the pH, feed the good bugs, use the mulch. That's like the step-by-step how we take care of the organic vagiculture, our organic garden. But for treating BV specifically, there's a really specific protocol that I recommend and utilize. And I've seen it be really, really, really successful. So the first thing to do is to, you know, really clean the space again. And I would always do an apple cider vinegar wash to bring the pH down. And so you can do that every morning. And you use about a quarter apple cider vinegar to three quarters water in a little old spray bottle or squirt bottle and kind of squirt your bottom with it. You can also buy a douche apparatus and use it that way, using a very gentle stream of water. And the cheapest way to do that, actually, is there's commercially available vinegar douches. Buy them, open them up, dump out the thing, make your own, because apple cider vinegar is so much more healthy, especially if you get the Dr. Bragg's or Bragg's brand or Heinz, like whatever one has the floating, good, you know, mother in it. You want the
mother,
real stuff.
Yeah.
You don't want it. Yeah. You don't want it pasteurized and strained, and you know, you want the sort of cloudy, particleized vinegar, and make your own mix because that's going to be a lot healthier than whatever is prepackaged and sterilized. And then with good rinsing afterwards, you can continue to use that $2, you know, douche apparatus that you bought with crap stuff in it for your own creations. And I usually do an apple cider vinegar. If it stings too much because you're too irritated, then move on to the hydrogen peroxide because we need to get the oxygen back into the tissues and back into the area. So we do a hydrogen peroxide douche for BV. And you do, if you can take a half-half blend of hydrogen peroxide to water, warm water, that's fine. But again, if it stings, then you back off on the percentage so that you can at least get some in. And so you would do that basically every 3 to 4 hours for relief. And while you're taking the Acidophilus orally, and then after you get some relief from smell or from the discomfort, then you start putting Acidophilus up vaginally every morning. And usually within a day, the symptoms are gone.
Wow.
But you want to continue the treatment for at least 5 to 6 days so that we really recolonize instead of having that keep coming back. Now, for folks that have really recurrent issues, they're going to need to probably do a folic acid supplement and a vitamin D supplement. Those are the two supplements that really make all the difference. Yeah. So, but it's taking it regularly. Like that, people who are susceptible for repeat infections, they have a bad bug that has a leg up. You know, like it has a hoof in. You know, you gotta really. So it's gonna take a long time to recolonize the environment, to shift the bacteria content, to shift the pH levels. And so if, you know, every time you have sex, whoop, I got a BV infection. You know, that means that your balance is right on the edge. Like it takes one little thing like that to turn the bad stuff on. You have a lot of reclaiming to do. Whereas if it's a one-time infection, it was probably just a one-time overexposure.
Now, if you were to go to your gynecologist every time this is happening, are they going to give you antibiotics? What are they going to give you?
Yep. Yeah, with BV, yep. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Because it's a bacteria, right? And that does knock it down for sure. But at what cost? You know, every time you take antibiotics, you decrease the colonization of the good flora and fauna that helps keep your body regulated and natural. And so if you're doing that 3, 4, 6 times a year, pretty soon, like BV is going to become your standard state of being because you have no good stuff to fight it off anymore.
Wow.
And again, this is like we can parallel this to the farming industry, right? We know from industrialized, commercialized farming that we are losing all of the viable nutrients in our soil. We are losing actually the nutritional quantity and status of our food because of over-farming. And what over-farming means is monocrops with pesticides and commercial fertilizers sprayed repeatedly. So it doesn't have the diversity of all of the good microbes and all of the good composting of organic materials to have good soil. And so it's the same thing can happen with your vagina, which is why chemical warfare really does not work, because it just creates an environment for the overgrowth of the bad stuff eventually. And, this is the really scary part, is that it also creates the potential for the mutation of the bad stuff so that now it becomes not biotic, antibiotic susceptible, right? So there's all this worry about MRSA in our environment. And it's about having a bacterium that was exposed so many times to the same antibacterium that it mutated. And bacteriums mutate much faster than the human body. So they're going to overcome the environment to live. And then we have a kind of a bunch of superbugs that we can't kill. And we hear about this in the mainstream media because it is a concern. So taking antibiotics for something like BV is really part of that cause. you know, that's part of that situation. And we could go on and on, you know, over antibiotics and strep throats and ear infections and intestinal issues,
yep,
and all of these things that are really curable if we just change the environment.
Yes, thank you for making that point. I think it's a really important one.
Yeah. So two of the other
I
was just going to say two of the other common vaginitis is trich, which is actually a parasite, and yeast, which is actually a fungus. So bacterial vaginosis, which is a bacterium. So it's really important to know what you're treating because you'll need different natural or chemical treatments, depending on which route you go for these different issues. So with yeast, again, it's about the environment. So it's about changing the pH and introducing the good stuff, and then using really antifungal treatments. And one of the best antifungals is tea tree oil in the natural world. And so a lot of people use that.
Do you use it internally?
Yeah, you can. It's very diluted. No, I really want to make that clear. Very, very diluted. tea tree oil is incredibly intense to the sensitive body, mucous membrane of the body. So it shouldn't be used directly. But as a diluted in any other carrier oil, it can be very, very effective. And it's usually 1 to 100 dilution. So one drop of tea tree oil to like 100 drops of olive oil is kind of the remedy. Garlic is also incredibly antifungal. So garlic can be used as a treatment, either as a mashed poultice, which is pretty intense if you have open skin, or as a whole clove, which is probably the most common use. People have had all kinds of interesting home craft projects tying strings around garlic cloves in order to be able to remove them when they're done. and that can be an effective treatment against yeast. But most of all, it's about adding the good bugs back because they knock down the yeast. So the acidophilus or the yogurt pastes are going to be the best solution for yeast.
Yeah. Do you want to
and
talk
then,
a little bit about the trich?
The trich, yeah. So colloidal silver can be one of the best, most useful treatments. And colloidal silver is actually a suspension of actual silver, colloids. That's what it is. And so they attach themselves to the parasite and actually deactivate them. So you can use these topically and orally. And colloidal silver is just a general overall good health-promoting remedy that can be used at any time, pregnant or not, with little kids, very safe. And so I recommend everybody just have that around. And then also, again, the apple cider vinegar to change the pH because when the acidity comes down, the trich just can't live anymore in that low acidity environment.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's a lot of info right there.
I love it. It feels like I'm in like a science class. Awesome.
It's a lot of info. But, you know, it's good to know your body. It's good to know, you know, what's going on for the body. So,
seriously.
Yeah.
One thing that I had read, I want you to talk about or comment on. There was something about prenatal inflammation and preterm labor resulting in higher rates of asthma in children and positive associations with autism. Do you know anything about that or want to comment on that?
Yeah, well, you know, it's all true. And it's hard to tease out from the research about whether it's because of the preterm birth or because of it's the pre-existing issue. I will say that pregnancy itself is an inflammatory condition. So we shouldn't get too wrapped up around that. But the over-inflammation can be an issue. And, you know, one of the treatments that we're just seeing start to have many, many approaches, many uses, is baby aspirin in pregnancy because it deals slightly with a potential over-inflammation response. But for these issues, the best solution is just to have a really healthy vaginal garden before you get pregnant so that we create the most healthy home for that baby.
Awesome. Now, you had mentioned earlier a little bit about the seeding of the baby's gut during birth and why that's important. Do you want to talk just a minute about that?
Yeah, it's pretty intensely cool and powerful and amazing. So the most important thing that ever happens in your microbiome happens the moment you're born. So babies who are born vaginally get their first major dose of all of these microbes from their mother as they pass through the birth canal. And these are beneficial bacteria like that lactobacillus, and they do all kinds of things, especially help to break down the lactose in milk. And kind of, it's pretty amazing to see in these studies, there's more lactobacillus in the mother's vagina as her due date nears, especially more lactobacillus up around her cervix in her posterior fornix than at any point in her life. I still really am fascinated to know how and why that, or how that happens. I understand why, but it's kind of like, how does her body grow more bacteria in one area where it doesn't usually? It's kind of amazing. And the whole point about this is because the baby is basically born sterile, right? I mean, there's some studies showing that that's not actually exactly accurate. There are some bacterium that does cross the placenta or exist in the uterus, exist in the amniotic fluid, but mostly for the purposes of the layman's conversation, the baby is kind of this new land, right? So whatever bacterium hits baby as they're first born kind of wins the race of this new land called baby, right? So we want the bacterium that touch the baby's skin, nose, eyes, mouth, everything, to be bacteria that is not only beneficial, but is known, is healthy, and is reproducible, right? So we want to have a ready source of this bacteria. So our bodies are not like the mainstream medical system would have us believe. Our bodies are not these systems like in a car. Like there isn't just like digestive system and the reproductive system and then the, you know, integumentary system. Like it's all one. Like we have this truly holistic focus. And so what's growing in our vagina is oftentimes also growing in our mouth and our hands. You know, like we are colonized by this rich amount of microbiome. So right after the baby's born, they get this huge jump. They get this huge colonization. And then they continue to get colonized because, of course, babies smell delicious. They smell like us, believe it or not. We're actually programmed to know our baby's smell and them to know us. And so we kiss them and fondle them and touch them and even lick them some because they're so delicious. And that's that recolonization. So throughout their first whole year, they're getting that inoculation of not only the beneficial stuff that have already worked so well for mom because she's alive now, but also the repeat and friendly bacteria, friendly exposure. Now, this is the interesting thing. Babies who are delivered via C-section get their first dose of microbes from their mother's skin and also from the skin of doctors and nurses in the delivery room. So, of course, researchers worry that C-section infants don't get enough of their own mother's microbiome and that these children might be on the road to poor development or higher infections or different things like that. And, of course, I'm sure your research has turned up, and this is a whole other blog post probably, about how the C-section rates have increased over the years. Specifically, C-section in the U.S. is the most common inpatient surgery in the country. And these increased... It's shocking, really, and there's a lot of reasons for it. We could go into that in another conversation, but it raised from 21% in 96 to over 33% now. And, of course, the World Health Organization recommends that no country, no industrialized country, should have more than 10 to 15% cesarean rate. So this is definitely, you know, important information. If one in three of the people you're talking to are going to have a cesarean, that means that one in three of the babies we're talking to are potentially going to be poorly colonized. Which leaves them at risk for all kinds of bad bacteria that exist to colonize them first. So we have an increased risk of all kinds of, you know, groupy strep and E. coli and different infections in newborns that really shouldn't be happening. And it also leaves them with a potential decrease in gut colonization. So they might have a lifetime of gut issues. And, of course, we're seeing that on the rise with irritable bowel syndrome and Crohn's disease and, you know, all these different conditions. So... This assistant professor and microbiome researcher at New York University's Medical Center named Maria Dominguez Bellello, she came up with this gauze in the vagina technique, and she's testing it. And basically, doctors or the nurses or whoever is assisting the mom who knows she's going to have a cesarean put a gauze pad in her vagina for an hour before her cesarean, and then they remove it, and then they take the baby, and as the baby's being assessed, they also swab the baby head to toe, which allows the baby to have that colonization right at the beginning.
Awesome. I was actually wondering that, because sometimes C-section is absolutely necessary, and if that's the case, it's like, darn it, you know, what's going to happen to my baby? So it's so cool that that lady, that doctor is doing that research. That's phenomenal.
Well, exactly. And what I want to say out loud, like really clearly to women who are in this situation, is we can't plan our birth any more than we can plan our life, you know. And, of course,
yeah,
everyone's benefit is baby safety. That's number one. And so, you know, occasionally, even taking all the methods to reduce cesareans, occasionally they're still really, really necessary. So it's important that we come up with solutions that that help, you know, moms in this situation. And I love this, because even if your doctor looks at you like you're crazy and won't even, you know, do this with you, or even if it is an emergency and no one has time to even think about this, it's okay for the next, you know, however many, you know, days, weeks, months you think about it, you can do this. You know, I guess, you know, the further you get from birth, maybe the more the ooh factor comes in or whatever, but... But it's a perfectly great idea, and is akin to that fecal transplant that we talked about right in the beginning, that putting the good bacteria, the good biome, microbiome, the good flora and fauna from one person to another helps to right an imbalance that might exist. So for a cesarean baby, you know, even though there might be an ooh factor there, and even though mom's bleeding for the first couple weeks, it's okay to make them friendly and reacquainted with a square gauze, you know? And I recommend moms continue to do it, you know, even for a couple weeks, repeat exposure, and kiss your babies and hug on your babies and, you know, make them really, really close to your skin, and that will help to recolonize them. The reports around this particular study that this doc in New York is doing is that that it doubles the numbers of vaginal bacteria that C-sections get. So when they with C-section babies, so when they get this gauze in the vagina technique, it doubles their exposure to those good healthy times less than babies who are born vaginally.
Wow. Awesome. Gosh, Augustine, this has been like such a cool show. I love it. I love this stuff.
There's a lot on this topic for sure.
There is so much, and now what I'm left with is like, how do I find someone near me that's doing this, or do you work remotely with people?
I definitely do. I love to consult with families who are struggling. I would be hard pressed to find a midwife who doesn't know this information. I know you introduced me as an expert in the beginning, but this in the natural circles is pretty common knowledge. So
okay.
I would say if you're planning a conception, if you are planning you know, to have a baby, find your local midwife and start talking to them. And most of the techniques we just talked about are home remedies anyway. So you can do a lot of the shifting, a lot of the care yourself. Sometimes practitioners are great for diagnostics, so you can do, a quick swab, send it to the lab, and find out what it actually is. So you can always utilize any practitioner you're comfortable with for that. And then when you get the data, you know how to treat it on your own with these techniques we talked about.
So good.
But it's really important. I mean, there couldn't be anything really more important, because this is the foundation of health. And we talk about the microbiome of the vagina. You know, we could expand this to talk about the microbiome of the human. It is radically important that we coexist with these flora and fauna that actually create, maintain, and promote health. And when we don't, we see all manner of disease and dishealth happening. So, probiotics is one of the most healthful benefits you can add to anyone's diet, including small children. There's baby biotics and baby Dophilus and all kinds of powder or liquid form. One of the simplest ways to change your health is just to add lacto-fermented veggies to your diet. And this is a really simple simple, easy, yummy, delicious way to get health in your diet. About 70% of our immune system is located in our gut. And this could be a whole nother show about how to amend the gut health. But, I mean, if you think about it, the vagina and the rectum are millimeters apart. So if we're helping the health of one, we're helping the health of the other. This is a holistic system. So, yeah, that I recommend diet change. It can be one of the best things. Supplement additions can be one of the best things. And my recommendation for probiotics, which is another way of naming the many, many strains that are like Acidophilus, which is one strain, is to buy them refrigerated and to buy them in the smallest quantity possible as frequently as possible, because these are live products. And if they're sitting on the shelf, if they're buying these giant mega bottles that sit in your refrigerator then for the next two, three, 10 months, you know, you're not going to have as healthful of a product. So even though it's more expensive, buy the small product and you know, buy them often. And then just change variety, change brands, change species. You know, there's some that have Ruteri and some that have Bifidophilus and some that has Acidophilus. And just buy as many different strains, as many different brands. Don't get locked into one thing, because our guts really wants this giant variety of healthy bacteria, and so does our vagina.
Awesome. So good. I love it. Is there anything else you want to mention? I mean, you've mentioned so many things, but I'm just going to ask if there's anything else you want to mention.
We've talked about a lot. Yeah, we've talked about a lot. Well, I guess I would just say the reason this is so important for women who are considering becoming mothers is because you literally pass your entire microbiome onto your offspring. And so starting life with an unbalanced microbiome can just affect everything. It can predispose an infant for weight gain or diabetes or all kinds of things. And so it's just such an important focus. And in fact, you know, the microbiome might be the reason why parental obesity is one of the biggest risk factors for childhood obesity, is because that child got colonized or didn't get colonized with a healthy microflora. So I recommend starting now, being really, really aggressive. Especially if you experience, you know, dishealth right now, it's going to take a long time, because it took this long to get here. So it's a big shift, but you know, staying hydrated, eating a variety of fruits and veggies, lots of different colors. Meat fats is really good. Don't let anyone tell you differently. That could be a whole nother radio show. but, you know, eating really well and using the food source of lacto-fermented foods and or the supplements, and just early and often is kind of my recommendation. Just as early as you want to your kiddos, start feeding them those good things, and then do it as often as you remember throughout your life.
Awesome. Such good information. Let everyone know where they can find you online.
Well, I am in my clinic. I'm at wisewomencare.com, and on the web for all my other pursuits, I'm at augustinecolebrook.com.
Awesome. I will make sure those are on the show notes. Augustine, this was such a fascinating show. Seriously, like, I love it. It's, you know, the whole microbiome thing and just how we've evolved. I mean, really, we've evolved for millennia with these bacteria, and like, we literally could not live and survive without them. So it's so cool to have the focus, just to have a show focused on the importance of keeping those bugs healthy so that we are healthy. And so thank you for being willing to be on the show to talk about it, because it's super cool.
Absolutely. And the last sort of plug is that obviously breastfeeding is kind of a no-brainer when you want to feed the baby a live substance or one out of a can. So whenever possible, breastfeeding is the other way we majorly colonize our baby's guts.
Nice.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you so much. Have a great week.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye. So awesome. I feel like I just took a science class, which always excites me. Love this. I hope you guys love this as much as I do. I don't know if that's possible, but super cool stuff. I definitely have some tips I am taking for keeping my lady part super healthy going into my pregnancy, hopefully sooner rather than later. Have an amazing week, everyone. Definitely tune in next week for our show with Stephanie Berman on the CIMA.net. I love you. Be happy and healthy, and we'll catch you next time.